This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And, oh boy, I just got a text message that my first guest today, Trent Presler, is not going to show up because he's on television today. He got, you know, this is always really wonderful for an author when you get to go on television. You know, radio is fantastic, but of course, television, well, you know, you get something. So on some channel somewhere, he right now is on television, and I'm very happy for him because he wrote a really interesting book, and I think that one that we will have him back, and it's called Little and Often, and it is really being talked about a lot and promoted here for Father's Day, and it is a wonderful book, and I'm sure that I will get him after Father's Day because it looks like he's in demand. The whole idea of buying this book and giving it as a gift for Father's Day has really taken off for him, and he's very lucky. And to that point, he's also going to be on CBS Sunday Morning Show. So, again, to celebrate Father's Day, as part of their Father's Day celebration. So you can see him on CBS Sunday Morning Show. And probably in a few weeks, I'm really almost completely fully booked now for the next few weeks. But I will try to find a place for him because I read the book. And it's a very touching book. And you know, you can check it out. Go to Amazon, and you might want to see if you like the idea of it, and buy it for Father's Day. Because remember, there are just so many wonderful books out there that are ideal for Father's Day. I was so happy when I had the other day Gordon Javna on, and we were talking about his book, the Uncle John series, sort of books of trivia, but very deep trivia, very intelligent trivia, and he was a wonderful guest, and his books are also wonderful gifts. But if you're looking for the absolute perfect gift, and you're not sure what to buy, just type in Nat Geo. National Geographic books are always the perfect gifts any time of the year. But for Father's Day, there is such a wide variety of books that they have. Well, they've covered everything. Everything from elephants to zebras and everything in between. Cars, airplanes, travel, all sorts of wonderful books that fathers will love. And these are books, as with all Nat Geo books, they're top quality books, beautifully illustrated, beautifully written, and with gorgeous covers that make them the ideal gift, the type of gift that a father would put on his coffee table, and then every time somebody comes to his house, he'll say, oh, look what my baby gave me. And so it's a kind of gift that sort of keeps giving the joy. So everybody, I can't think of a subject that National Geographic hasn't covered in over 100 years of publishing great books. There is certainly a book out there that you would love. The wine book, the Sotheby's wine book, is so gorgeous. I have that on, well, I have two coffee tables in my house. So on one, I have Sotheby's wine book, which is just gorgeous. And on the other one, I have National Geographic Owls. I never get tired of looking at the National Geographic Owl book. It's enormous. It's a big, thick book. And you look at the pictures. This is amazing photography. It's, sometimes you look at them and you think these owls are, you know, could just pop off the page. And that's what happens always with National Geographic photographers. They just capture that right moment, that perfect second. That's what makes them different from all other photographers. They just are the very top of the line photographers. So definitely check out the National. You can go to the National Geographic site and just scroll through all of their books. And of course, they're also available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And also, I'm sure there are Barnes and Nobles that are now open, and you can actually walk in and pick one up. It's rather refreshing to be able to do that. So anyway, that's my idea for Father's Day. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to give a gift that will, you know, you can buy a tie, but you know, nowadays nobody's going anywhere to wear a tie. Now, I always bought my father socks every Father's Day. All of my life, as long as he was alive, he always got very expensive socks. And that was because, you know, my father was a guy who didn't spend any money on himself. He had one or two good suits, and he always looked dashing when he got dressed up, but generally he was in work clothes. But because he went through the Battle of the Bulge and his feet got frozen, for the rest of his life, his feet ached. He never complained, but you could just see that there was this little bit of pain in his feet. You could see it in his face, but he would never complain, never once complained. But I know he loved nice, soft socks. And so everybody in the family, that's what we would buy him, socks. Because it was just something that he appreciated and we knew that he loved. And thinking of that, I'm thinking of Peter Riva, who's been on the program many times, and his grandmother is Marlene Dietrich. And my father at the Battle of the Bulge got to see her and meet her. And this is what I love about this program. I've had so many wonderful, these golden and silver threads that have connected me to people. And, you know, people I might never have spoken to and never had heard their stories if not for this program. But Peter Riva, who is just a brilliant writer himself, when he came on the program and we were talking about his grandmother, I told him the story of how one day, it was terrible for people. The Battle of the Bulge was such a horrific fight. And it was so cold. It was a cold, cold winter. And men were just, they'd lay down and they'd just freeze. It was just horrible. And the fighting was terrible. And one day, in the morning, my father and his troop, they were away from the main base where they were set up. They were on patrol, and suddenly this Jeep comes roaring by, and they didn't know who it was. You know, they knew it was an American Jeep. It stops, and there is Marlene Dietrich, and she's wearing, like she was, a helmet and fatigues. And she stood up on the back of the Jeep, and she pulled off her helmet. And all of his life, my father remembered that glorious, glorious moment when her hair just caught the sunshine, and it was so beautiful. So it was funny. After that, whenever there was a Marlene Dietrich movie on television, the whole family would watch it, because my father never talked about World War II. I mean, never. We actually didn't know too much. We knew that he received a Silver Star and a Purple Heart, but we never really knew about it because he wouldn't talk about it. And it wasn't until really quite, you know, I was already, you know, in my teens when one of his old friends from the Army came, and he said that, you know, not only did my father, you know, grab a hand grenade and run with it. You know, I don't think I'd... It's just still hard to imagine. It's something like out of a movie. And he saved the lives of his fellow guys who were, you know, they were all together. They were having coffee. And a grenade landed right next to them. My father was tall and he walked like Jimmy Stewart. And so he sort of had this sort of shuffling kind of walk. And he just picked it up and ran with it and threw it back to them. And so that's why he got the Silver Star. But he never talked about it. But I know that for Father's Day, for him, it was socks. But hopefully none of your fathers have gone through that kind of hell. And a National Geographic book would be appreciated, I'm sure. Okay. Well, you know, it's been so funny. I've had one sort of author after the other, all getting recently, this past month, quite a few of them have been, I've gotten them on the program, and either they're getting optioned or they're getting a movie deal. And so it's really exciting for me. It's one of the things that, as somebody who wrote scripts and I adapted three novels to screenplays, I know what it's like when you write a book, and then when so many authors, of course, think of themselves when they're writing the book, they're seeing it as a movie in their own heads. And so it's exciting when I hear about an author who gets a deal. Now, and I'm going to tell, you know, this happens. Clive Cussler was on Joy on Paper, and he said to me once, he said, you know, I made more money. One of his books was optioned. And he said, I made more money from the options than I did from the sale of the book, because they'd option it, and then someone would run with it and try to, you know, get it financed, and the option would come up, and he said, you know, if they want it, they're still trying to raise the money, they option it again, and then they option it again. I think one of his books was optioned over the years. You know, sometimes they'd stop, and then somebody else would come back, and over the years, maybe a dozen times, he got optioned on one film, one book that never made it to film. And then a couple of his other ones did make it to film, and he wasn't happy with them. So, you know, this can happen. And sometimes you get optioned, and your movie never gets made. So, but I always live in hope. And, you know, at the end of my program, I often talk about Carol J. Perry, because I just like the characters that she's developed in her Witch City Mysteries. They are characters that I relate to, characters that I enjoy them. And it's a lovely premise. Carol herself was born on Halloween Eve, and so she set the story in Salem, which is a perfect location for a film. I think it's wonderful. I mean, you could send your crew there and shoot there, and it would just be wonderful. So I'm hoping for her to... Now she's on book 11, probably right now she's working on book 12, but she's got another series she started. But this is one of the things that can happen to you. And it's funny, another local author I met and who is now doing our book buzzes, Rita Moreau. Also, you know, she sees her books, when she writes them, she sees them as films in her head. So it's something that as she's writing, she's thinking about it. And that's important, too. You know, you might not get a film deal ever for a book, but if you see it in your head, it really helps you to write it really much better, because you see the picture in your head, and then all you have to do is translate that into words. Now, Rita started off with one series several years ago, and this is what I was talking about a couple weeks ago about determination. The successful authors are always the ones with determination. When Carol J. Perry started writing six years ago, I don't think she expected she would be writing 11 books and be in such demand that her publisher would say, write us another series. Now, that's always the position you want to be in. You want to be in the point where your books are growing with a growing fan base, and a publisher comes along and they say to you, write a series. Whoa, you're in a different ball game then. And now with Rita, she started off with her, she's self-published. She started off with her first series, Mary Catherine Mahoney series, very nice series set here in Florida. But, you know, at one point she said she had another idea, and now she's running with it. And this is what I really admire. Somebody who gets an idea, sticks to it, puts in really that what we call the sweat equity. You have to spend time on these things and learn. And Rita's getting better all the time. You can actually, you can go to both of their websites, both Carol J. Perry and Rita Moreau, and you will see the development of their books and their whole attitude about being an author, because it is not easy in these days to be an author. You have to do a lot of work. And so I really admire those authors who put in that work. And Rita, she does our book buzzes. So I'm really always very pleased here in the studio. We call her One Take Rita, because she can pop in and she just does them. She's really, really good at them. She's a natural. And it's really wonderful for me that she's joined Joy on Paper, just like it's wonderful that Devon Miller has joined Joy on Paper. We're going to play, I think we'll play Rita Moreau's Book Buzz first, and then we'll do commercials, and then I'll come back. And I think I have time then for Devon's. But let's do Rita Moreau's Book Buzz.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Wheeler Dealer by author Rita Moreau, the first in the Ghost in the Camper kooky mystery series. Everything about Mabel's golden years has been a surprise. The divorce, the ghost haunting her vintage camper, the dead guy whose murder she must solve. Here's the buzz. Mabel Gold still isn't sure what happened. Treated by her husband for a busty bimbo the same age as their youngest daughter, the feisty 60-something rejects the retirement community and heads west in a vintage camper. But the RV comes complete with a ghost who needs a good deed to get into heaven. And cracking open a homicide at their first stop in Savannah could lead them both to a new lease on life. Determined to dig up the dirt on the dead Wheeler dealer, Mabel and her phantom companion, Irma, tackle the crime. But with two rich dudes from Dubai, a Willie Nelson lookalike mobster, and a widow nicknamed the Barracuda, all on the suspect list, conjuring up the truth could take a real live miracle. Can Mabel catch the killer before she's the next soul crashing the pearly gates? Wheeler Dealer is the high-spirited first book in the hilarious Ghost in the Camper kooky mystery series. If you like Golden Girl sleuths, zany characters, and sardonic humor, then you'll love of Rita Moreau's Witty Whodunit. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I'm not Irish. I'm actually a Youper, and I have my stone from the shores of Lake Superior with me today. But I do like St. Patrick's Day. If I weren't here in beautiful Tantalk Studio in downtown Clearwater, I would be at my favorite pub in New York City, the Ginger Man. But I'm glad to be here with you because I believe that one of the joys in life is to see your words on paper, to see them published, to hold in your hands a book that you have written, or to see on film the words that you have put on paper. One person who knew about the joy on paper was Ernest Hemingway. Although he would often and loudly tell people that the most frightening thing to him was a blank sheet of paper, this from the great hunter and war correspondent, I know he was lying. Hemingway was always good at telling a tall tale. For the truth is, like me, he loved writing. I think he just didn't like competition. I'm sure that for him, when he looked at a blank piece of paper, he saw what I see, an opportunity, a world that you can open up right before your eyes. You put down one letter after another, and soon you have created magic. You can go back in time, you can jump centuries, you can go to another world, like Andy Weir did in his new book, The Martians. Every week, I hope...
Okay. Oh, that is so nice of Big Ed.
We pulled a trick on everybody. We have to explain. We came back with, instead of coming to you live, we came back with your very first show.
Oh.
On, what was it, March 17, 2015.
Exactly.
See how I told you the big difference?
Oh, Ed.
You were reading back then, weren't you?
Oh, I was reading. Ed, you don't know.
And I could tell you were starting to lose it a little, you know, you're getting a little excited and a little winded. And
Ed. I was so scared. That's so sweet of you to think of that. I adore you. I always adore you. And I will salute you, Ed, because that was fantastic that you brought that, because it's so funny. I haven't listened to it. I mean, I was scared. You're lucky, Ed. I was so scared that I didn't throw up all over the place. I mean, I was like, I didn't know what I was doing. It was so funny. I had, at that point, I did not know any authors. And my first guest was Irene Goodman. Mm-hmm. And it was lucky that, you know, she gets paid like $35,000 to be a keynote speaker. So she actually took over most of that show for me. But, you know, it is amazing, right? Now I can wing it. I think over the years, Ed, seen, there were times like when I stop and sort of like scare it, like, she's going to collapse. But now, actually, I could probably talk for the whole hour without talking about books, even.
And you don't have to write anything down.
No, I don't write anything down anymore. It's so funny. So, thank you, Ed. That, I really needed that. That was good. That was
It shows the progress you've made. You know, now you can just come in, sit down, and do a show. And then, like you said, you're not held the like gunpoint if somebody doesn't show up.
Yeah,
you know, you can do. We've always got filler for this, like a book buzz, or to give you a chance to drink water or whatever. But
Exactly. Oh, that was so sweet of you to think of that, because that really was great. You know, I'm very happy for Trent Pressler. You know, it is a big deal when you can get on any television station to promote a book, because they don't really do a lot of book promotions. And that's why radio is so, you know, it is still so important to reach the listeners out there. People, if we can influence people to read more books and to write, and it's so funny how I've just gotten into this whole thing of people are writing to me and saying, look, I'm writing a book, thank you, and I'm really so thrilled with it. And just the other day, a listener here in Clearwater said, well, I have a friend in England. Will you talk to him? He's in England. And I said, sure. You know, he's written a book. And so I'm networking, and I get fan mail from the Ukraine. It's just wonderful the way that this whole Joy on Paper has turned out. And I'm so, so happy every day when I come in here and I see Ed's smiley face there behind the window. And know that I made it. Ed, thank you so much for all that you've done for me over the years.
Remember I used to have to cue you when to start talking, and you know the phrase in the music when to start.
Yeah, Ed, we've come a long way together. It's really great, and I you are so sweet, and I really, really appreciate everything that you do for me. And we've, you know, I think together it's just been a wonderful journey. Because like today, I know that we always enjoy when I have a big, you know, global best-selling author. But what I also like to do is this authors who don't normally get a chance to promote their books, and authors who really need that opportunity. So I don't know, is my guest on? Is she already called in or not? It's all right if she calls in. If not, Ed and I can keep talking. Because it's just, this is the whole thing about what I do here, trying to spread the joy. And I want to also thank everybody who sent me emails about Jim Lamb and his little, you know, his little lesson, literary lesson. I don't know what we'll call it, but Jim's going to do some more of those. And this week he did alliteration. And I think every week we'll try to get a Jim Lamb, a literary lesson from Jim Lamb, because he's so talented. He's a talented poet, and I love to play his poetry. As Squiggles is one of my favorite poems, and so we'll have more of Jim Lamb. But right now I'm going to talk to my guest, Marilyn Peterson House. Hi, Marilyn.
Patsy, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on. I know that, you know, when every time that I get a email from Kim Dower, I know that I'm going to have, you know, a book that's meaningful to her, because Kim Dower, you know, she really, really wants to help authors reach an audience. And so I was very, very happy when she sent me your book. And it is a difficult book. You know, it's not the kind of book that a lot of people will, you know, go out of their way to promote. It is, you know, it's a difficult story, but it is an important story. And so I was, as I said, I'm happy that you're joining me today, because I never know, you know, with a book such as yours, and it is a story of really, as you say, your fight for life. It's called Half of a Whole, My Fight for a Separate Life. And, you know, Marilyn, you have to tell us about this story. It's a hard story for me to explain to people. But it's, as you said, it's an important story and one that you really wanted to tell.
Yes, that is very true. So it's a story about twins, and it's a story about my intimate relationship, my bonds with my twin as we grow up. And the first part of the book is kind of the idyllic childhood on a farm in western Minnesota. So that's a kind of a joyful part of the book. But then we have the intrusion of mental illness, and the mental illness is really has a very strong dynamic impact on him, on family, on myself, and that's pretty devastating. So the book then goes into how that all plays out and how my struggle to free myself from the pain of the past and to be able to move forward with my life.
Well, you know, as I've told people before, there's always a book in some, you have a book inside you. Everybody, I think, has a book. And for some people, it is a cathartic release to be able to write it down, to see it on paper. And has it helped you?
Yes, definitely. In fact, when my brother had his breakdown, when we were 45 years old, I had suspected something wasn't quite right in the early 20s, but then I went on my own way. He went off to the military, and so I didn't have a whole lot of contact with him until he was 45, and then he had a psychotic breakdown when we were visiting my mother for a holiday. And I was the one who had to call the police to take him to the hospital against his will. And so that became, I, in response to that, had a quiet breakdown, an internal breakdown. And that led me to kind of a deconstructing of my own life. And I learned, you know, how my role in the guilt I felt over having a twin with a mental illness and when I was seemingly okay. And so when I wrote the book, I went back and I had to examine, you know, the years we grew up, and I examined my reactions and my responses to my twin. And it was taking apart, a deconstructing of my life, and then putting it back together. So yes, definitely, there was a cathartic part of that.
Now, tell us, let's talk about the beginning. Let's talk a little bit about your childhood, the good and the bad. Tell us about your childhood.
Well, our childhood was idyllic. You know, we lived on the farm. We played with the calves. We fed corn to the pigs. We discovered new litters of kittens in the barn. And we had very little supervision, and so we spent all our time together. And then we went to school. We started school in a one-room country school, 20 students, and we started out, there were 8 grades, and it ended up 6 grades, but they were like family. They were all the farms in a 9-square-mile area. And then when we went, it wasn't until we were in high school that my brother and I started to chafe against each other. We had different interests. He, I think, when you look back, showed early signs of depression. And, of course, we didn't recognize that. It was the 50s, and nobody, even if you did recognize it, you certainly wouldn't talk about it. And it was then that I began to feel the isolation of the farm. I felt like perhaps, you know, life was going on somewhere, but I wasn't there. And so So I got to the point where I really just wanted to escape and find my own life elsewhere. So, but I look back on the time on the farm as being a wonderful period. I think that's a beautiful part of Minnesota, the western. It was a tall grass prairie at one time. So I have very fond memories and go back nearly every year.
Well, it is a beautiful area. I come from the Upper Peninsula, from up by Houghton Hancock in the Copper Country.
Uh-huh.
So it's similar. And, you know, of course, it's beautiful. And my grandfather also had a farm. And so I remember all of that kind of life. And it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a different dynamic in your family. You had sort of some religious situation that it was different from what we had. So do you want to explain that?
Yes. We were raised in the fundamental segment of evangelicalism. And so that meant that everything was interpreted, the Bible was interpreted literally. And so we were not to go to movies, we were not to dance, we were not to play cards. And so all the things teenagers would like to do we were not allowed to do. And it also entered into the whole issue of mental illness. My brother came home on leave, and that was the first that I had noticed that he was exhibiting behavior that was unusual for him. He was normally a gentle, kind person, and he got into a high-volume argument with a long-distance operator. He went on a tirade at somebody who greeted him on his way out of church. And so his behavior was very abnormal. And my mother, during that same leave, he went home to the farm, and the minister of the church came out afterwards and told my mother that he thought my brother should go see a doctor. When my mother told me this story, she said, I told my sister Elsie about it, and she said Pastor Fullen should be taken out and shot. That was because mental illness, in their eyes, was like being having demons in you, and so it was looked upon as in biblical terms in that fashion. And also, they did not trust therapists. If therapists weren't born again Christians, they felt that they might lead someone astray. So the stigma of mental illness was huge. It was secretive. Nobody talked about it. And indeed, my mother and my brother never accepted the fact that he had a mental illness. That made it very difficult for the rest of us to deal with it.
Well, you know, you've had people commenting that the book was very helpful for them to sort of address their own problems and their own looking back on their own life. So I think, as I've said before, every book has a purpose. And you've written a book that I think will touch hearts and will open eyes also to perhaps understanding more, being kinder, being more thoughtful about mental illness. So it's a book that I think that, you know, you've done a great job with it. You've written it very nicely. The writing is excellent.
Well, thank you. And I'm hoping that people who have mental illness in the family will indeed, as you say, identify, and it will help them by seeing how they're not alone. You know, I think almost everyone knows someone who, in their family, or a friend who has mental illness, and so it's kind of good to feel like you have a whole support structure around you if you reach out to people.
And I'm sure it's the kind of book that psychotherapists will recommend, because sometimes they like people to read books that will help them to think about other people instead of just themselves. So I think you have an opportunity there. Now, where you grew up, was it near Walnut Grove?
No, Walnut Grove. Well, not too far from Walnut Grove, but yes, you're in the right segment of the state.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because of course I've been to Walnut Grove, and that's of course where the Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum is.
Yes,
and a friend of mine was born there. Leo Thorsness, Colonel Leo Thorsness, was born in that little town.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard of him. He received the Congressional Medal of Honor. I've been to that area. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful prairie land, and I love going back there, that wide Minnesota sky and that space. It's a beautiful place.
It is. It is. Well, you know, as I said, I hope that, of course, at this point, I don't know how much you can get out and go around and sort of, there's a lecture series, actually, where I'm sure that you will be able to, get connected to people and really promote your book at events like that once things open up again.
Yes, that would be great. I'd love to talk about it. There's many themes in the book that I think people can relate to. The other one is I had a difficult relationship with my mother, which also tied into being a twin and also tied into a bit with the religious outlook, where the firstborn son was supposed to be the leader, was supposed to be the one to take over the farm, was supposed to take responsibility for the family. And, of course, she took it upon herself to make my twin into that son that my father had so much wanted. And in order to do that, anything I did, she thought, diminished him. So she took it upon herself to kind of squash me down in an effort to build him up. And, you know, looking back, I certainly understand what she was trying to do. But as a, and when I was growing up, I certainly did not understand it. And that translated into kind of her dismissing my work, my career, criticizing me for how I raised my children. She even criticized the food we ate, which you know, sort of exemplified how critical she was of me. But over time, I was able to, I wasn't able to deal with that issue in therapy because my therapist said it was too deep and too painful. It had started way back when we were born. One of my stories she used to tell me was that when I was able to walk across the room by myself, but she kept me in a walker for 3 more months because she didn't want me to walk before my twin. So it started that early. But what I want to tell the listeners is that even though I had this relationship with my mother under these strange dynamics, that in the end, I was able to confront her over this, and that there was a way for me to finally come to acceptance, to and to forgiveness. So that even though the book has a painful journey, I think that it has an ending that's a resolution, and in a way, a joyful ending. So I wouldn't want people to be worried about reading the book.
No, exactly. It reads very well. This, as I said, you wrote it so beautifully. It reads, it flows very nicely. And the important thing is, it is inspirational. It is inspirational and educational because we learned something about twins, some things that perhaps we don't know. And also, I think just by seeing how a mother can do wrong. She might love her children, but she can do something wrong. And then people can reflect on that and say, well, I don't want to do that same kind of thing. Am I careful about what I say to my child? Am I encouraging rather than discouraging? And so I think from that point of view, the book has a great value of really helping people to understand how to treat other people. And let's talk a minute about being twins. You've tell us about what you learned about twins in general.
Well, it being a twin is an interesting thing because, of course, it's hard to say how it is to not be a twin when you are a twin. But what I realized was that, as I told that story about Walker, my mother also told us the story that when we were very small that he refused to take his cough syrup, so I took it. I opened my mouth and took it for him because I thought it would make him well. That's an indication of what the risk is with twins, is that you're so close to each other and you spend so much time together that when you reach the stage, the psychological stage, when you're supposed to individuate, separate yourself, identify yourself, develop your own self boundary, so this is me and I'm not you, twins frequently take their twin inside their own self boundary. So they become internalized as an extension of your own self, which is what happened to me. I carried my twin within me. So it was as though he were an extension of myself. And I always knew the instant my twin walked into the room, I could read his feelings. I knew his facial expressions. I just understood him in a way that most people do not understand another person. And so this, of course, doesn't work too well because he had his own interests and he had his own values, and so he wasn't an extension of me. So it put a lot of pressure on what I expected him to be, and it also put a lot of pressure on my relationship with other people, people I was close to. I somehow expected them to be an extension of me. When I went into therapy, I was in therapy for 3.5 years after his psychotic breakdown, and my therapist opened up this ocean of grief I had, opened it up and helped me, you know, to rid myself of all my guilt and all that pain over my twin. And that was when I sort of came to realize that he, my twin, really was a part of me.
Well, you know, Marilyn, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. The name of the book is Half of a Whole, and it's by Marilyn Peterson House. Do you have a website you want people to go to,
yes.
Facebook?
Yes. What? Yes, Marilyn Peterson House, one word, no caps, .com.
And House is spelled H-A-U-S.
Right.
And they can go there.
Marilyn is M-A-R-I-L-Y-N, Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, House, H-A-U-S.
And I think on Facebook you're just Marilyn House, right?
No, I am Marilyn Peterson House there also.
Also, okay, Marilyn Peterson House. Okay, well, thank you for being on Joy on Paper. It's a fascinating book, well-written, and one that will really open your eyes. And also about sexism, about treating girls differently and giving, you know, having less expectations or more expectations. So it's a fascinating book, and it's called Half of a Whole. And it's available wherever books are sold. And Marilyn, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you, Patsy, so much. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. So this is a book. This is what I'm saying, that, you know, I just love to be able to help people with a book like this. Will really help anyone, if you know anyone with mental health problems. This is a great book, or just an interesting read. I really fascinating about life back in the 40s and 50s. Well written. Now let's play Devon Miller's Book Buzz. I want to play that. I want to come back and talk a little bit about Devon, because this kid is amazing.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Hitting number one on the Amazon charts for new release in a category of children's fiction on social situations is the book Tori the Great Discovers Her Superpower, written by Tanita Tennant and her four-year-old daughter Tori Tennant. In Tanita's third published book, and Tori's first published book, Tori is really excited about getting glasses, but soon realizes that she'll be the only one among her friends with them on. With a little creativity and support from her family, Tori discovers a superpower that will help her face her friends with her new look. Teaching self-confidence and acceptance of differences, this book is all based and inspired around Tanita's daughter, Tori, and her actual story of getting glasses. In real life, Tori actually does call herself Tori the Great, and wears a pretend cape that you'll see illustrated in the story thanks to Carla Bivens. An award-winning poet, Tanita has been writing since she was a little girl, and now her daughter is a writer at a young age as well. Having been a writer at a young age myself, it only shows that you're never too young to start writing. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
Oh, I love Devon Miller. He is so... Isn't that a fantastic voice? Ed, don't you think that's a great voice? Does he have
He works very well with it.
Yeah, he has a great voice. And what I love about him, you know, he's doing these wonderful book buzzes, and he finds really the best books for kids. What I also love about him is that he does a lot of volunteer work. He's going around to schools, to hospitals. He reaches out there and helps kids. And he part of the profits from his books, he donates to the children's hospital, because he spent time when he was young. He spent quite a bit of time in the hospital. And that's where, you know, he had the opportunity to do a lot of reading, and he started writing. So, you know, this is what I'm always saying. You know, I look back now, and I'm so sort of, and I think to myself, my goodness, I spent hours looking at that clock in my, especially in high school. I really didn't like high school. You know, because I read so well, and I've been reading all my life since I was 3 years old, every year, you know, school in those days started the day after Labor Day, and we'd get our books that first day, and it was always, you know, a shorter week, and then we'd have, you know, 4 days of orientation and that. And so we'd get our books,
And then on the weekend, that first weekend in September, when after Labor Day, I would read all the books. I mean, I would read them from cover to cover. So by the second week of school, I'd already read all the books. So you can imagine, I really had a difficult time in class because I'd already read the books, and in many cases, I remembered the books. So the only classes that I loved were the ones that I didn't know the subject, like Latin. That's why I loved Latin, because I didn't know Latin. So I couldn't read the whole book. I could read the English part, but I couldn't read the Latin part. So I loved Latin, and I took it for 4 years, which was really exceptional. They only kept the Latin class going, I think, because I insisted I wanted 4 years of Latin. And I loved chemistry, biology, botany, because although I read the book, and I'd read the entire book, I didn't have that hands-on. So I loved the hands-on, particularly in chemistry, because in those days, we could make stink bombs and not get expelled and not get, you know, surrounded by hazmat people. So we had lots of fun in chemistry. And biology, I didn't like as much, and I didn't like cutting frogs and stuff. But those are the classes I loved. The rest of the time I spent looking at that clock. I was always looking at that clock. And so that's when I first met Devon Miller. And he has this wonderful little series. He has 5 books now in the series, Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. And you can go to his website and see more about him. His books are available on Amazon, and it's called Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. Wonderful little books for kids. Perfect. You know, it's so clever. How many of us, well, I know I did, spent hours and hours looking at the clock, and we never thought to turn it into a character. And Devon Miller did. And that's why I love him. I think he's just fantastic. And I'm so really proud that he's with now Joy on Paper, and he's doing 1 book a month for kids. And I can't believe we're already up to June. It's incredible. The year's just gone so quickly. 2020 seemed to drag along, but 2021 is really just moving along really quickly. And I'm very grateful both to Devon and to Rita Moreau for their book buzzes, because this is part of the thing. And now Jim Lamb, who's going to join us with his literary moments. I'm not sure what we're going to call them, but he's going to help us understand a little bit more about writing. And this is why it is so much fun to be here in the studio. I get to do all of this fun stuff, talk to all these wonderful people, and follow these threads, these silver and gold threads that connect me to so many people. Because just like I just spoke to Marilyn Peterson House, I have been in her neighborhood many times. Probably I drove past her farm on the way to a Walnut Grove, because I've been, of course, at the museum there. You know, and everybody, you know, when you're a little girl and you read a lot, of course, you know all about Little House on the Prairie. So anyway, remember, one of the things I always tell you is one of the joys of life is to hear. What am I doing? See, now, I look, because Big Ed is looking at me, I'm good. Blushing. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, or perhaps a streaming video, or if you're very lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start today. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. You were so thoughtful. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because, oh, I would have loved to be a general. I love being saluted. Everybody, have absolutely fantastic weekend. And special thanks to Big Ed in the control room for being so thoughtful. Bye-bye now.